Cut it off? No, not really. What's it, another minute to go or something?
Yeah,
it's 24 and something. 1 minute. Okay, so good morning, Rabbi. So we were learning about the daughter of Nechunya Choifa Shichin, the man who used to prepare the wells for the Oile Regolim, the expert. It does say, I saw in the Makori yesterday, that he was a volunteer, although he was appointed by the Bezdin, although he was appointed by the Beis HaMikdosh as an official digger of wells. Nevertheless, he was a volunteer. He didn't accept any payment.
Wells,
yes, for the Oile Regolim, right? Because we were saying that during this period now, yeah, the Beis Din Yerushalayim organized that all the roads should be repaired and the bridges should be repaired, and any damage that was caused during the winter. Yeah. Yeah, they used to fill potholes, yeah. Right? Which they don't do here. But yeah. Anyway, so and he was the one who used to organize the wells for the Oile Regolim. And the wells for the Oile Regolim, we always think of it as people drinking, but the Oile Regolim were bringing with them a lot of animals as well. Animals as korbanos, or animals to ride on, animals to lead their carriages and their carts. So therefore, they needed a lot of water. And he was the one who used to reinstate the wells every year. He was the one who could find out where the water was, and no below ground, where to find the water. He could divine, yes. And the problem was that his daughter fell into... You missed all this, Charlie. His daughter fell into a well. And she was in danger of drowning, and she was saved miraculously. And she said that she saw Avraham Avinu, and she saw the ram of Yitzchok. I think there's a, what's it called, isn't there? Yitzchok's ram, Isaac's ram. I think there's a wine that carries that name.
No one's ever seen that before.
In any event, but that's what she saw. And the question that you, where we finished off yesterday was that the Olam was very distressed to learn that the Gemara continues by saying that this Nechunya Chofa Shichin's son died of thirst.
Yeah.
And you know, if his daughter was miraculously saved in the schus of the mitzvah that he provided water for the Oile Regolim, and that's why the daughter was saved, how come the son died of Tzoma? And Tosfos asked the Kasha on the spot in Bava Kamma Daf Nun, and Tosfos answers, it's not for me to say, but I think the answer is not as satisfying as the question. So Tosfos says, yes, but he didn't die in a pit. He didn't die in a well. He died by Tzoma. He died from thirst, which has a connection, obviously, to Nechunya providing water. But nevertheless, he didn't die in a pit. He didn't die of drowning in a pit, which is what was going to happen to the daughter if she hadn't been miraculously saved. I think it's the moral I saw in one of the other Mephoshim says that you've got to say for sure, right, that the son must have committed some sort of an avera for which the middah keneged middah was that he should die of thirst. You've got to say that, because otherwise, it doesn't really make sense. Why should the son die? Why should he die of thirst? Why didn't, obviously, whatever avera he did was quite a serious avera, otherwise maybe the tefillas of, or the schus of the father that he provided water for the Oile Regolim should have saved the son from death. So, they discuss it. As I said, I think it's the Maral who says that it must be that the son died because of his own avera. Going back to our story, the question that we asked as well, which we haven't dealt with yet, really, is why did she see Avraham Avinu, and why did she see Yitzchok's ram? Well, right, that's the question, and the Mephoshim deal with it, especially the Mephoshim on the Ein Yaakov, around the Ein Yaakov. I left my notes in the office, so I don't remember who says what, but I'll tell you tomorrow, probably later. But one of them says as follows. He says that he brings a Gemara. There's a famous Gemara about Mary Magdalene. Yeah, some people say it was her. There's a famous story. Basically, I think it's the Maral says is that whenever somebody is saved from death, who was about to die, but then for some reason they were saved because of the tefillah or of a tzaddik, or because of some other intercession, the Rebbe Shem changes his mind, someone else is going to die in his place. There is a midah kenegah midah. Somehow there's a cheshbon in heaven, and that's the story of Miriam. I can tell you the story tomorrow, but I haven't got enough time today. But basically, the hairdresser, exactly, the hairdresser. They brought the wrong one. She was supposed to bring the teacher. Brought the hairdresser. V'chole. So yeah, and basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a cheshbon of a certain amount of lives in the world, a certain amount of people being alive, a certain amount of people being dead at any one time in the world, and therefore. Now, it says that's why she saw Avraham Avinu with the Eloi Shel Yitzchok, because the Eloi Shel Yitzchok was the substitute. Instead of Avraham Avinu shechting his son, Avraham Avinu was supplied with an ayil in order to replace the son. And the Shoma, and he brings down, in fact, one of the Mefarshim brings down that's the concept of Kaporos. Zeh Tachaseh. I should be chas v'sholem in a situation where my life is forfeit because of the averus that I've done, and the chicken kaviyochel is going to replace. It's a concept, right? It's a concept, and the concept is, and therefore the Eloi Shel Yitzchok replaced, and Hu Adin, when this lady was saved, when the daughter of Nechunya Chofeshichim was saved, it must be that someone else in the world died, or maybe even an animal, I don't know, but died as a result, and therefore that's why she saw the image of Avraham Avinu and the Eloi Shel Yitzchok, which was the substitute for Yitzchok Avinu, not being killed.
Started at the Turaway, Northwest London, Tuesday, Kaf Ches Ador, 17th of March, Ring Rav Reb Mendel Cohen Shlita, newly appointed senior rabbi, St. John's Wood Synagogue, Kilu Yotzon Mitzrayim, experienced the Exodus personally. The Six Torah was sponsored. Lid Nishmas, our esteemed founder, Rabbi Yosef Dov, Bon Hashem, Shri Itzvah, Fra Noli Brocha.
Good morning, gentlemen. I don't know if there's ladies involved, but good morning.
Online.
Usually when I get up to talk, I sort of like get some idea who the audience is and what I need and how well to prepare and what to prepare. But then on the way, I thought to myself, who would not realize what kind of an individual is dedicating at 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning to be at a shiur? Obviously, somebody who's interested in Torah, who kochs sich in Torah, who learns Torah, and it should be therefore addressed accordingly. So today the title was Ke'ilo Yotzom Mitzrayim, Ke'ilo Hayom Yotzom Mitzrayim, and it's a point which I think is really relevant and really important in the days that we live, not just in preparation for Pesach, but to realize what it means to prepare for Pesach as an individual. Of course, we prepare when everybody prepares their homes for Pesach, we prepare the Seder plate, we prepare the Divrei Torah. But are we different from one Pesach to the next? Have we just earned slightly more Peirush and Manishtana or a nice idea? Or are we actually more Ben Chayrin than we were the year before? Are we able to journey? And as we shall see, it's not just B'chol Dor V'Dor, it's also B'chol Yoyim V'Yoyim. It's a mitzvah that we recite Yetzias Mitzrayim every day, and we're meant to be on a journey. So do we journey each day? Are we able to progress? So we found the idea that I will talk about is based upon a Maharal. But before I do that, I just want to tell a little story, because by telling a story, it helps us get into the mindset more relaxed and therefore able to think about something at a different level. When I was living in Los Angeles, and my job at the time there, some 15, 16 years ago, was a rabbi to a drug rehabilitation center. But I also was responsible for the donations and things that were given to Chabad. And often you would get cars. In America, if you get a rebate on a car, you were able to get better value than the car was itself if you sold it on the market and pay tax on it. So people would donate their cars. So if you go to New York and you turn on the new radio, see 100 donate your car. That's what it is, the getting car. Anyway, a Holocaust survivor calls me and he asks me to take his car because he can't drive anymore. It's a beautiful car. It was an old Cadillac that had great suspension. It would drive up and down. As I was leaving, I got a call from a parent who said that his child is in a particular hotel with needles all over him and he needs to be taken to the rehab. So I take my new car that's bouncing up and down and I'm driving to where this individual was at this hotel. I pick him up, put him in the back of the car, and I'm driving towards Chabad. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Los Angeles, but if you go along Hollywood Boulevard, you come to a big corner where there is big billboards and lots of action happening in the industry that operates in that part of the world. And on top of the billboard, they had this old-fashioned moving slide advertising, which was back then it was a new model. Now they have electronic ones, but it moved, like turned around with different ads. I'm sitting there with this guy in the back of my car. I'm driving my free car that I just picked up. And he's completely gone. And as I'm pulling up and I'm seeing the advert, comes next to me this other thing, a pickup truck, which said free wheelers along the side. And it had this most unusual thing that I'd never seen in my life, but thereafter I learned about. It's called a retracting suspension. The guy pulls his car all the way up, literally like his wheels are this high, and it goes flying up and it's shaking up and down. And my car starts shaking from his shaking. He's got a free wheeler car and I'm driving a free car. This is, it's a long light at sunset. I look up to the advertising, and the first advert I see on the board, this is all happening in real time, is a guy sitting on the beach, in, I don't know where it was, somewhere in the Bahamas, with a coconut thing, and it said, you two could be free, you two could come here, chase travel or something. Like, okay, fine. Watching the next billboard. Next billboard is this guy with his head in his arms, and it said, are you in $10,000 more of debt? 1-800 debt-free. And I'm thinking to myself, the previous guy was given a credit card to be free to go on holiday. The next guy, he spent too much money on his credit card and he wants to become debt-free. And both of them are using free. I'm driving an actual free car and the guy next to me has free wheels and he's leased it and it's going up and down. And this guy's completely hammered at the back. And I thought to myself, what the heck does the word free mean? There's nothing free. It is free. It comes for free. What does free mean? And it's a really interesting thing if we think about what does it actually mean, freedom, especially in reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because we say we become free, but we don't really become free. Because what are we doing when we become out? We're being
Avdei Hashem.
So are you really free? So what is freedom? And what does it represent? And more, perhaps more importantly, what is the uniqueness of the freedom of Yetzias Mitzrayim over all other items? Because if you think about it from two angles, number one, we continue to be in Golos. Number two, there were further Shibudim thereafter. So what was it specifically that something about Yetzias Mitzrayim, B'chol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Menoratz Atzmei Kehilu Hu Yotzom Mimitzrayim. Maybe B'chol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Menoratz Atzmei, that he was with Mordechai and Esther, or was in the Hanukkah story. What is it, there's something etzendik about it that is fundamentally different that is achieved. So let's have a look at the Maharal. Yesh Makshim. Some people ask, I printed some copies if you have, if you're not. The previous teacher also quoted the Maharal. This is Gevuras Hashem 61. It's on the Haggadah. Ma hoyil lanu hayetziah. Some people ask, what was the point or the value in coming out of Egypt? So this is slightly different question. What was the point of coming out? We were free. What do you mean, what was the point? But he's saying more than that. Harionu mushabodim b'shar malchiyos. There's still a deficiency in the freedom because we further become slaves thereafter. D'may shenom malchus mitzrayim b'shar malchiyos. But instead we should be meshubat to Haman, we should be meshubat to Keir Starmer. Who would you rather be meshubat to? So what does he answer? It's a nonsense. There was something about the exodus from Egypt that was etzemdik. There was an essential freedom. There was something changed fundamentally about the Bnei Yisrael in their exodus from Egypt that meant that they were essentially free. Which doesn't mean to say that it was a bigger level of freedom than took place in Hanukkah or Purim. But it was even when we are still in Shibud, we have an Etzem Dika freedom that exists. And that's what makes Yetzias Mitzrayim much more profound. Again, it's not just that it was an etzem dik, it was a greatest freedom, and the later freedoms weren't quite as good. The point is that it was such an etzem dik of freedom that while we are still psychologically or physically in a shibud, be'etzem, we are free. That's the nakuda here. And that is achieved specifically at Yetzias Mitzrayim. V'zois ha'mayla atzmis li'Yisrael, she'im ruyim li'is b'nei chayrim mitzad etzem ma'al yosom. V'divrei mikri lo'yivotul dover atzmi klal. V'dover mikri, meaning to say a small exile that comes along during that post-Mitzrayim will not be able to get rid of the etzem dika, the freedom that we have already established. Why? Ki adayim, even in a matzav of galus, Yisrael hamayla hazoish, shem bnei chayrin be'etzem im hashibud b'mikre. Why? Once God has taken the Jews out of Egypt, and thereby made them free, not only were free, but we are kings and princes. Any other later experience is only comes and goes, but it's not essential. Now, even if, Rahman al-Islam, a person is born and they spend their whole life in Golos, so you say, well, what do you mean? Their whole life, they were in Golos. But it's not, because as being an Etzem Yid, they are a B'nai Chayrin. But what does it mean to be an Etzem Yid B'nai Chayrin? So Chassidus, Kabbalah and Chassidus go further into this in two levels. The first is understanding the fact that, and it says in the Gemara, we brought it here, Lo avdei Hashem v'lo avdei Parei. The Gemara then goes on to say, Akati avdei Cheshverosh Anan. But the point over here is that there was something about becoming an Eved to the Eibishter that changed, that is part of the changing of that status. And the next pasuk from Vayikach Vadeheim, Hashem Yisrael Meretz Yisrael, Shtarei Kodem. There's something about the experience of becoming an Eved towards the Eibishter, that a bittul that is coming as an individual towards the godliness that we are now Kalim to, both through Yitzias Mitzrayim and both through Matan Torah, that changes the reality of a Yid that's living and walking around than he was pre. And that is that we have a relationship with the Eibishter that had completely changed. And that relationship changed to such an extent that even when we find ourselves in Golos, we are still free. Even if we are on the Shibud Malchus of the hardest hardships, we are free. And that freedom is not represented in whether we're able to leave the house at 9 o'clock. But it's an Etzem Dika freedom, that we are Meshuvah to the Eibishter, and we are Kalim to the Eibishter's Ruchnius through our Gashmis living in this world. And that cannot be shifted by anybody else or by anything else. So this is the idea of appreciating the Kheros that is experienced through Yetzias Mitzrayim over the other experiences that take place of freedoms, but more importantly, that even where we are not in a free state, we are still the Etzem free. So this is all sort of the background to understanding at a deeper level what it means to Hashato Avdim. Now we are slaves, but now we want to be B'nai Chayrin. But what does it mean to us? Because to an extent we are free. We're living in a free society. And if we give the example of our friends freewheeling in cars and free smoking in the hotel rooms and driving up and down Sunset Boulevard in cars that they've got free, in holidays they've got free. So what is freedom and what does it actually mean? So everybody has their own experiences in life. And what's important to realize is that everyone has their own Mitzrayim, their own Mitzorah. Nobody alive, nobody that exists, doesn't have struggles and challenges. Some struggles and challenges are coming from the outside, klapei chutz, and sometimes they're klapei pnim. The ones that Yetzias Mitzrayim, that a person is working on when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim at the Pesach Seder, is their own personal ones. And what's unique about the Yetzias Mitzrayim of Pesach is that the Eibishter takes the Jewish people out of the darkness. But they didn't have to realize that they were in darkness. If a person says, you know, I'm doing fine, there's no darkness, so then they don't need to be taken anywhere. But if a person realizes they're in darkness, they don't necessarily need to do anything. Just become aware that that is where they find themselves. So at the Seder night, there's an awareness that a person can have is that this is the darkness that I find myself in. And the Eibishter comes and extracts the individual from that place, just like he did by Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is brought up now in the next source, which is adopted from Sichas of the Rabavitcher Rebbe 5732, and it's put together by Sichas in English, and it's available in bookshops and even online. Though we may never have been in Egypt, nor experienced actual slavery, redemption can be real for us, for, as Hasidic thought explains, Egypt is not only a geographical location, but is also a state of mind. In fact, the name for Egypt, Mitzrayim, is almost identical to the word Mitzorim, which means straits or limitations. In other words, our personal exodus from Egypt involves self-transcendence, lifting ourselves out of our natural limitations. Now, what does that mean, lifting myself out of my natural limitations? Did you ever think to yourself, I want to lift myself out of my natural limitations? Did you ever think of that before? What does it mean? What the natural limitations is that we woke up this morning, we had a coffee, we put on tefillin. Those are limitations. And those are all holy limitations. How do we lift ourselves out of the limitations that we find ourselves in? We each possess a soul, a spark of God. And like God himself, this spark is infinite and unbounded. Did you ever think about your soul in that way? Did you ever think that your soul is part of the Eibishter? Not just here to serve Hashem like Hashem's a king watching over. Oh, he's done it tick. Oh, he hasn't done it cross. Chas v'shalom. You are a walking soul of Hashem in this world, specifically with a message. This is Yiddishkeit. This is the Ben Chayrin. This is the uniqueness of the etzem that is happening at Yetzias Mitzrayim. On the personal level, Egypt symbolizes those influences and forces which confine and limit this spiritual potential. What are they? It could be something from the outside that's distracting you, or it could be a person's own grudge they have against a chava, or a chay that they never paid back, or a mitzvah that they're struggling with. The nature of this personal Egypt varies according to one's character and degree of refinement. And it's no one else's business, quite frankly. But it is who we are. It is our soul. It's free. And it wants to leave its shibboleth even greater. One person's Egypt may be defined by his selfish desires and natural drives. Another by the bounds of intellect and reason, which perhaps they're using in the wrong way. There is even an Egypt of holiness. An Egypt of holiness. Could you imagine that you're doing something holy and correct, but it's actually a Mitzrayim? A state in which a person committed to spiritual growth restricts his potential for advancement, accepting his natural limitation as permanent. That's it, I can't learn anything more. This is where I am. I can't be kinder than this. I have no more tzedakah to give. That's for sure. All of these Egypts confine our infinite godly nature. We have infinite godliness inside of us, in the Maharal's words, the etzem, that is what is given to us. And it can achieve greatness. The problem is, we're limited in a body. And so long as we allow our body to dictate and explore it, then we're in golus, then we're meshubat. But when we're able to say, hey, what's the etzem part of me? That's the free part that is much more to give and much more to experience, then stop making it about myself and make myself a better person. Leaving Egypt means leaping over all these and any other barriers and constraints and bringing our infinite spiritual potential to the surface. A personal experience of redemption affects the totality of our divine service. It's a really very important thing to realize that often when you meet people and they're struggling with a particular thing, it impacts everything else that they do. Whether they like it or not, it impacts everything else that they do. If something is on your mind and it's preoccupying where you are and what you're trying to do, when you go to work, you try to put yourself in a mindset, but you have something bothering you. It's just the way life is. If a person is able to identify those things and think about them, we're not talking about to be healthier alone and have a better result on the business, but how you are spiritually. If a person says, well, okay, that little thing I don't need to deal with, but I'm davening three times a day and I'm learning, etc., your divine service is also at a limited pace. And therefore, a person's experience of redemption through his divine service is much greater when they're able to identify and elevate this person. As long as a person lives with his personal Egypt, as long as the infinite potential of his soul is denied expression, he will perceive the observance of the Torah and mitzvahs as external to himself, separate from the essence of his being. I mean, this is a really powerful thing. The individual is being, like the Maharal said, being taken out by the Eibishter. He says, I'm the Eved of the Eibishter. But he's not really the Eved of the Eibishter, because he's really not dedicated himself entirely to revealing the essence of the Eibishter that is found within him. And as a result, all the Torah mitzvahs they do is an extension to him. It's not who he is. Okay, now I'm from here. Now I'm no, it's much more than that. When a person relives the Exodus and uncovers his essential godly nature, he develops a deeper connection with the Torah as well. And I think when we prepare ourselves for Pesach, and we think about where we are in the world history, and where we are as individuals, it's frightening, but it's so elevating and liberating. That on the one hand, we can have all the freedoms that we want, and we feel entirely constrained. On the other hand, the freedom that we're seeking is external, and they too are mikri, they don't stay and they come and they go. And really, the essence of it all lies within us. And that's what takes place in Yetzias Mitzrayim. The potential to change the world, the potential to change ourselves, the potential to have an influence at a far greater level than we could have ever done before is actually nowhere else. Of course, we need books to inspire it. But we're doing that already. How do we get into the level of the essential self? Hamayla, Atzmis, Liyisrael, Sheim Ru'uyim, Liyis B'nei Choynim, it's at Etzem Ma'alusam. And that's something to meditate upon. It's something to think about. So when you're stopping in your next Krishma Shalamita, or your next Tachanon, or wherever it might be, or your next moment when you say, I want to prepare myself for the Seder, just take a step back and say, what is this Golos different than any other Golos? Why is this Mitzrayim different than any other Mitzrayim? What is Seder night for me in the year 5766 when the world is, who knows what's happening in the world? We literally have no idea what's happening. People think they know because they go to Twitter, but they don't know what's happening. The people that are doing what they're doing don't know what's happening. Because they too are agents. If they knew what was happening, then it'd be, who knows what would be. But what we do know is that inside of each of us, at Yitzias Mitzrayim, was given an etzem dikar ability to be a ben chayrin, and to, with that, bring Geula to the entire world. And the question is whether we can make a difference. Whether we will be the dar, we'll be the generation that says, this year, not because we have nice hotels and a lala flying, which unfortunately they seem not to be. This year, because we are Yidden, and we are servants of the Eibishter, we want to bring the Korban Pesach. Not the Waldorf Astoria lounge, that's nice too. But literally. And that Gula will come when we make our own Gula Protas. That's the reality. Waiting for something to happen is not going to do it. We need to free ourselves from our own shibud, and that will bring the collective shibud as well. Conclude. So this is my take on the Etzem Chirus as it comes through the preparation to Pesach. And I have to tell you, there's hidden at different levels of experience. I come from St. John's Wood. You guys are in Golders Green. On Sunday, I took a group of children before Bar Mitzvah to Stamford Hill so they could experience what it means. We took them to Hype. We went to Hatzolah. We went to the soup kitchen. Pasha to see the Afrume Yid Lept in preparation. And I have to say that I also think that the greatest way of redeeming Am Yisrael is when we don't keep it to ourselves. For a person to wake up and go to the screen and say, I go to shul and I daven, beautiful. Same guy did it in Bnei Brak, some guy did it in Stafford Hill, somebody did it in Old Bury Road in Manchester, wherever it is. Very good, Shkoya, excellent. But are you able to inspire another Yid to do something? Because that's what the world needs. If a person goes home at night and they close the door and they close the curtains, they look across the street, Shema Yisrael, thank you Hashem for what I have. Today was an okay day. I had a little issue here, there, but tomorrow should be better. What's happening to Yankel? And not just Yankel, what's happening to Henry and to Albert? We need to take responsibility for every single Yid. When the Yidden came out of Mitzrayim, they weren't all from Yidden. On the contrary, they'd gone where they'd gotten to. So it's important for us to realize that the Gula requires us to think outside of the parameters of where we operate. And if we meet another Yid, and another human being, but certainly another Yid, what can we do to be a Dugma Chai that person feels excited about Yiddishkeit, and number two, inspire them that they will want to do something more as well. Because we can't leave anybody behind. You think Michelle's going to come and say, okay, let's go. Hold the screen, here we come. Next stop. Okay, we're done in London, now let's move on to Brussels. He's going to go down to 841, and he's going to continue down to Knightsbridge and go all the way down to South London. There's Yidden there. And they all need a car. So that's what we need to think about as well. We are collective Am Yisrael. And it's actually, there's a Rashi, I think it's in Kitiso, that says that there's a, when I think it's Parashas Mishpatim at the end, where there's a pasuk that reflects on there was a miracle of how the Jewish people got together before they left. And what's the miracle that took place that the Jewish people got together before they left? They got their bags and they walked. Is that a miracle? That you get out of your house or your flat or wherever you are and you say, okay, we'll go to the bus station. Where are we meeting you, Moshe Rabbeinu? The Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, that the speed with which all the Yidden from all the different places, you need to call around, have you seen Yankel? No, we haven't seen him, he's gone missing for 3 days. Have you seen Herschel? No, we don't know where Herschel is. They all came to the center where they needed to leave and left. Hundreds of thousands of people. It's not an easy thing. They're all spread around Mitzrayim. Okay, we know here's a Yid. Of course, there was the paint. I mean, the blood. What's the B'chor with it? Maybe that helped. They knew of every person all the way. So that Rashi says it was a Nesa. They all showed up at that time. The point I'm saying is that we want to have Gula. We need to think about every Yid. And so long as we don't have the mindset of thinking about every Yid, the Gula will not be a proper Gula. It won't be an established Gula. So number one, we need to make a Gula Protis. The goal of the protest is to say, where is my freedom? What does call B'chol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Nirasat V'Gino Hu Yotzom Mitzrayim? Not Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron and all our ancestors. What if you came out of Mitzrayim? Your children came out of Mitzrayim. Your wife came out of Mitzrayim. Your brother-in-law came out of Mitzrayim. All of these people, what is it for me? What am I doing to be able to elevate my consciousness, my experience, my spirituality, finding my godliness that is permeating my existence? And how, with that, am I going to encourage and inspire another year to do the same?
How did they see?
How did who see?
You asked at the beginning. Mitzrayim, you've got Mordecai, Esther. What was about Mitzrayim? But before Mitzrayim, the year was restrained. And after Mitzrayim, he had this connection with Hashem. What actually changed there?
I can only tell you according to Kabbalah and Chassidus, but it's also brought down in other places too. First of all, the Krisus Brisset takes place at Matan Torah. It's obviously the essential difference that takes place, of which the Yetzirah is a preparation for it. From Kabbalah's point of view and Chassidus' point of view, there's an experience in Mitzrayim. Why did they have to go down to Mitzrayim to begin with? Why did Moshe? Why did God tell Avram that you didn't need to go to Mitzrayim? For what? Lech lecha me'aretzcha, I've given you Eretz Kanaan. What's happening here? Why did they need to go to Mitzrayim to begin with? It was about being an Eved. Okay, hey, maybe. There was an experience that needed to take place that transcended. There was a journey of Bnei Yisrael. First of all, the tumah, the lowest level of tumah was in Mitzrayim. Do you think Yaakov Avinu, the beautiful MBD song about the first Jewish family? Imagine Avraham Avinu, a from a year, a tzaddik. With his kinderlach going and living in Camden Town, I don't know where. But that's where they were going. There was, and Vayinatzlu es Mitzrayim. According to Kabbalah, Vayinatzlu es Mitzrayim, literally, the sparks are there. They needed to bring them out. And with that, the Yidden are then, and by the way, when they leave, they've sunk into the lowest tumah anyhow. So God's whole plan was somewhat failed. He had to go in there and bring them out before it was all over. But what happened there essentially is that before then, the reality of creation, the reality of God's relationship with the world that He had created, didn't permeate to an essential level. When the Ovis, Kimu Kol HaTorah Kula, if they were to have done something with the holy object at the end of them acting was no longer holy. So long as they were operating in a particular mitzvah, the mitzvah was holy. The Kedusha didn't permeate the world of Gashmias. At Mitzias Mitzrayim, and specifically at Matan Torah, after the Achonah of the 49 days to it, allowed, through the Eibishter coming down on Mount Sinai, literally allowed for the spiritual and the physical to interact in a way they hadn't since the creation of the world. So why it took place there? What did they see? That's a question for the Eibishter, but that's the technical experience that takes place at that time. Okay. The last chapter, the last thing I bought was from the Tanya, but mainly because the Alter Rebbe has a diuk here, where in the Mishnah and obviously in Haggadah, it says Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayv Adam Ler Sets Atzmei Mitzrayim. But the Alter Rebbe adds Bechol Dor V'Chol Yom V'Yoyim, and he speaks about learning Torah every day and saying Shema every day that brings the person from the Mishka to Chivya, taking a person from the darkness of their snake skin. That whatever, it's a Kabbalistic thing you can read at the end. But ultimately, it's not the Alter Rebbe's Chiddush, because we said in Haggadah from the Mishnah too. Actually, Drasha Rabbi Yechonam, until he had the Drasha, B'chol Yoyim, we're Chayv Adam. It's a daily experience. May we all be redeemed, and may we taka be Zeicha to have the Beis HaMikdash speedily built, and the Kayhanim and the Leviim, and the Vinoichim and Azvachim and Apsochim, take it from Yad, the Chayim.
Anything 100%. You got your stuff.